Okay, so we are in the middle of Perek Chaf Aleph, chapter 21. And you may recall that David is on the run, and he ends up in the city of Nov, and he's very hungry, and he asks them for some bread. He asks Ahimelech for some bread, and Ahimelech gives him some holy bread. Either it was Lechem HaPanim, according to Chazal, according to the Pshat, the Radak, it was the Karban Toda, the Lachme Toda, the breads from a Karban Toda. And right, according to the Malbim, it was Trumas Lachme Toda. It was the Truma, that which was separated for the Kohen, from the loaves of the Karban Toda. In any event, he gets his food, and in Pep, if you look at Pasuk Ches, verse 8, so it says, V'sham ish me'avde sha'ol bayomahu. And there was a man from amongst the servants of Shaul, Bayomahu, on that day. That seems to imply he wasn't normally there, but he happened to be there right now. Netzar lifnei Hashem. And he was stopped before Hashem, or gathered before Hashem, or davening before Hashem. It's the same word, atzeres. We actually talked about it last week, I think. That it has sometimes connotes a meaning of gathering, sometimes of stopping. So he was there, lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. We'll explain that in a moment. Ushmo Doeg Ha'adomi, his name was Doeg the Adomi. Abir Haroim, the mighty, or the head of the shepherds, Asher Le Sha'ol. Of Shaul. He was the head of the shepherds of Shaul. So who was this Doeg? What's this description of him, that he was an Adomi, and he was Abir Haroim, he was the head of the shepherds? And what does it mean that he was Netzar Lifnei Hashem? He was stopped before Hashem. What does that mean? So the Radak, on a Pshat level, learns that Netzar Lifnei Hashem means he was involved in, he had come to bring a carbon, and the Radak says that he was with a group at first. He came with some friends to bring carbonos, and they left after it was done, and he remained Lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, davening, perhaps bringing more carbonos. That's what he was doing there. The Rashi, based on the Medrash, says that he had stopped himself in front of the Ohel Moed, in front of the Mishkan, to learn Torah. He was learning Torah there. And that aligns with what Rashi learns later in the Pasuk, when it says, Abir Haroim. He was the head of the shepherds. So Rashi says that means that he was the Av Beistin. He was the head of the Beistin. So in Chazal's eyes, Doeg wasn't just a simple guy. He was the head of the Beistin. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was here learning Torah. And yet, as we'll see, he still is going to end up doing something pretty bad and speaking Lashon Hara about the people of Nov. And despite his great stature. That's how Rashi learns. Now the simple understanding of Abir Haroim is he was the head of the shepherds. He was the minister of shepherding of the land, of Shaul, under Shaul. He was the head of all the shepherds. Department of shepherding. Yeah.
Also, how could he have been studying Torah if he was an Adomi?
Oh. So nobody understands. Good question. So what does it mean he was an Adomi? So many of the Mefarshim learn it means that he lived in Eretz Edom. I don't know if he still did. At some point he did. And that's basically how everyone learns, I think, Kepe Echad. All the Mefarshim speak out that it means he lived in Edom, but he was in fact born Jewish. He was not a Gentile. So Chazal have a number of midrashic interpretations of him being an Adomi. He was red from he had blood on his hands. He was red from this. He was red from that. There's a lot of different midrashic interpretations of that as well. Okay. Vayomer David l'Achimelech. Verse 9. Pasuk Tes. And David said to Achimelech, V'in yeshpo tachas yadcha chanis o charev. Is there here under your hand either a spear or a sword? Ki gam charbi v'gam kelai lo akachti v'yadi. Because my sword and my vessels, my armor, or my weapons, I didn't take with me. Kihaya dvar hamelech nachutz. Because the king, the matter of the king, was very urgent. So remember, David is here under the guise that he's been sent by Shaul to ask a question of the Kohen Gadol, to ask the Urim v'Tumim a question. That was his claim. So he still has to play along with that story. So he says, so why doesn't he have any weapons? Oh, I was very rushed to come here, and I didn't have time to take any weapons. So he asks Achimelech, do you have any weapons?
It's a very odd question. He wouldn't know where his most famous sword is?
You can't just take it without permission.
No, it's his war trophy. So he didn't know it was there?
No, so even if he knew it was there, he was asking for permission to take it.
Well,
to acquire.
I would say like this. I would say that he doesn't really want to take that sword. He's really asking, do you have any other weapons? And even if he knows about that one, right? So, and the answer is going to be no. So that he's going to end up with that. So, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer HaKohen, and the Kohen said, Cherev Golias HaPlishti Asher Hikisa Be'emek Ha'ela Hinehi Ruta Vasimla. The sword of Golias, of Goliath, that you, David, struck in the valley, Ha'ela, that was, I guess, the name of the valley, if I recall correctly, or incorrectly. Or that valley, maybe. Hinehi Ruta Vasimla. It is wrapped in a simla, in a cloth, in some kind of garment. Acharei ha'ephod. It's after the ephod. That will need interpretation. Im osa tikach lecha kach. If you want to take that for yourself, then take it. Ki ein acheres zulasa bazeh. Because there's no other one besides for it. Vayomer David, and David said, "Ein kamoa." There's no other one like it. Tenenoli, give it to me. So the only sword in the city of the Kohanim, right? So we see that they were really peaceful people. They did not have weapons. The only sword in the whole city is the sword of Goliath, of Golias, which was David's war trophy, which they had placed in the Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan. Now, why was it in the Mishkan? Why would they put the sword of Goliath in the Mishkan? So the Radak explains, because it was a great reminder of Hashem's miracles. When you come to the Mishkan, so you see the sword, you have this reminder of the great miracle that Hashem performed, and that will make your Mishkan experience that much better. Now, It says it was wrapped in the simla in a garment acharei ha'ephod. So simply understood, that means behind the ephod. So there was some ephod. What the ephod was one of the Kohen's garments, and it's some kind of apron. And the simple understanding is that that there was a place where they kept them in the Mishkan, and the sword was behind it. The Medrash understands that it means after the ephod. And what does the ephod in this context mean? It refers to asking the Urim Bitumim. As we said, David came here to ask a question from the Urim Bitumim, from the Kohen Gadol's garments, he told him that he can find the sword after he asked the question of the Urim Bitumim. That's how Rashi and the Medrash learn here. Now, it's interesting, it doesn't tell you what was the question. Forget about the answer, what was the question? Right? It doesn't tell you what the question was. I don't think anyone tells you what the question was. So we can speculate. I think I saw that the Mishpat Zozav suggests that maybe the question was, should David keep running away or should he go back? So the question is, right, well, when you ask the Urim Bitumim a question, right, seemingly the Kohen Gadol would know what the question is. It's true. It's a good point. I'm not sure if maybe there was some way he could ask it without telling the Kohen Gadol what the question was. Perhaps. That's another question. Is who, first of all, who has a right to show up and ask the Urim Bitumim a question? Anybody? Can anybody just come to the Kohen Gadol to ask a question, or do you have to be of a certain stature, a certain position? So the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin that the king can ask, and I think it says, I'm not sure who else, it for sure also says, and someone that the tzibur is tzarech lo, someone that's needed by the people, also can ask. So David would seemingly fall under that category. What? Right, so good. So that would fit into this. Right. So the shofet, now you could say that the shofet had the din of a king, was considered like a king, but you don't need to say that because according to the Mishnah, even someone who was not a king but was just someone who was needed by the people, he could also go and ask a question. Right, but again, the process, I'm not sure what the process was, if the Kohen Gadol would have had to hear the question, or if he could ask a question even without the Kohen Gadol hearing the question. Interesting thing to think about. Now there's a very fascinating interpretation of this pasuk given by the Maaser Rokeach. He was from Amsterdam. I don't know. There's a Rishon the Rokeach, but I don't think this is the Rishon the Rokeach. This is the Maaser Rabbi Eliezer Rokeach from Amsterdam. I think he was Hasidish, although I'm not sure. So he learns the pasuk as follows. The Mefarshim are bothered over here that why was the sword in the Mishkan? So we just mentioned this question. And what did we say? We said, like the Radak said, it was there, l'zecher hanes, to remember the miracle. So the Mefarshim asks, so if it's there to remember the miracle, so one second. What?
Inside, nobody can actually see.
Inside where?
Inside of the Mishkan.
Okay, besides for that, let's say, you know, the people who come into the Mishkan who are allowed to come in will see it and it will help them. But we have another question. Read the Pasuk. What does it say? It's wrapped, right? It's all wrapped up. So if it's meant to be as a reminder of the miracle, so why is it all wrapped up and it's tucked away? That's the question that some Mefarshim ask. So another question is a grammatical question. What does ba simla mean? What does ba simla mean? What would be the difference if it would say bisimla versus basimla? Anybody know the difference between bisimla or basimla? So ba, excellent, excellent. Ba means biha, in the, just becomes ba, in the simla. Bi is in a simla. When you say ba, so there's a hey hayadiyah. There's an identifying hey, the. In the simla, in the garment. What garment? What garment is this referring to? What special garment was this wrapped in? So the Maaser Kach. Exactly. So what was this with the sword wrapped in? So the Maaser Rokeach wants to explain it al derech remez, that it's here to hint to an additional idea. So he says we know that when the Jewish people fight a war, ultimately it's lo b'cherev. Right, it's not by the sword and not by the spear. That's not how the Jewish people win wars. Rather, it's with Hashem, and that's David himself. David himself says that to Goliath when he goes out to fight Goliath to fight Goliath. So David says, "You're coming at me with sword and spear and shield, and I'm coming to you b'shem Hashem, with the name of God." That's how we fight wars. That's what David says. It's interesting, by the way, as an aside, why does David want a sword? He's the big talker, right? He's the one who, when he was fighting Goliath, he said, "I don't need a sword. I fight b'shem Hashem." And here, he's asking for a sword. He's asking for weapons. Where what happens is... He needed something. Okay, so he can't find a rock? He can't find a rock anywhere? There's no rocks in Israel? So then why does he want it? Yeah. So...
It's not like for fighting, because he cannot actually...
I don't know. I'm not sure then why he would want it. He wants a weapon. So it's possible that was when he was fighting against Goliath, that he was willing to rely on his righteousness versus the righteousness of Goliath. But when it's Shaul who was after him, so, you know, Shaul was great in his own right, and Shaul had merits, and, you know, he had his faults, but he also had great merits, and he was a great tzaddik in his own right. So it could be that he wasn't so confident in his, you know, to just rely on that in this case, because Shaul had his own bitachon and his own merits to rely on. So it kind of moved out of the sphere of, you know, the war of spiritual giants and down to more of a physical battle. Perhaps. That's one suggestion, I think, in the Mishpat Zav. Okay, but anyway, so the Maaser Rokeach says we don't fight our battles with swords. And in fact, when we're on the right spiritual level, we don't need swords. We don't need to fight. The Torah protects us. Our righteousness can protect us. and tefillah. So that's one point, okay? One point is that's not the normal way that the Jewish people fight a war. They're not the best way. The best way is we fight a war with tefillah and Torah. That's where our true merit comes from. Now, second of all, the Gemara in Shabbos says that the Gemara, we see from a Gemara in Shabbos that a simla, a garment, can be a mushal, can be an analogy to the Torah. Can be an analogy to the Torah. Divrei Torah are called simla in a Gemara in Shabbos. So it's also in the Zohar, he says. The Zohar says that the chidushei Torah that a person has, the novelties in Torah that a person comes up with, so they become like his garment. They can become like his garment. So he says that's why they wrapped the sword in a simla. A simla, because a simla represents Torah. And they were wrapping the sword in the Torah to send the message that if you involve yourself in Torah and Avodas Hashem, you don't need this sword. It can remain wrapped up in the simla. It can be covered up by the Torah. So he has a little play on words. He says, if you learn Torah lishma, lamed shin mem hey, if you learn Torah lishma, so then it becomes like a simla, sam, sin, mem, lamed hey, the same letters. It becomes like a simla. I guess it protects you. So he says that's what the idea. That's what the idea of the sword being wrapped in a simla was. That was ultimately the message that they wanted to send, was that the sword isn't, you know, you look at the sword and the message was supposed to be Hashem protects you, not the sword. So by wrapping the sword in a simla, they were sending that message that the sword can remain wrapped in the simla as long as we have Torah and tefillah and avodah, service of Hashem, then there's no need for the sword. It can remain wrapped up in the simla. Now we can understand a little bit better, according to this, the give and take between Achimelech and David. If you look at the end of the pasuk, so he says, "Imosa tikach lecha kach." If you want to take it, take it. Because there's no other one. Because there's no other one. And David says, "Ein kamoha, tenanoli. There is none other like it. Give it to me." So what was that little exchange? So Achimelech was telling David, says the Maaser Rokeach, "You're asking for a sword? Here is the sword of Goliath HaPlishti that you struck without a sword." And that's why it's wrapped in the simla, to remind people that we don't need a sword. So if you want it, you could take it, but you don't need it. That's what he was telling him. If you want it, take it, but you don't need it. And David said, "No, ain't kamoa b'chol haaretz. There's no other sword like it." On that, the Radak comments. The Radak says that Achimelech didn't really want David to take it, right? The Radak, even within his own reasoning, the Radak is learning that it was there as a commemoration of the miracle. And this was an important fixture in the Mishkan now. Achimelech liked having this sword in the Mishkan, so that when they came to the Mishkan, they were inspired by the sight of that sword. So that was his hesitance. Right? The Maaser Rokeach says his hesitance was he was saying, "David, you don't need it. If you want it, take it, but you don't need it." And the Radak says his hesitance was he wanted it to remain there as a sign of the miracle, as a reminder of the miracle. But David said, Ein kamoha. There's none like it. There's none like it. Tara saw something more about that, but perhaps not. On a simple level, he's just saying this is the best sword. There's no sword like this. This was the sword of Goliath. This is a special sword. So either way, David needs a sword, and he accepts it from Ahimelech. Okay. Vayakam David, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Vayakam David, Vayivrach Bayomahu Mipnei Shaul. And David got up, and he ran away on that day from Shaul. Vayavo el Achish Melech Gas. And he came to Achish, the king of Gas. Gas was a Plishti state. So he came to the king of Gas. Now, what's Vayivrach Bayom Hahu? He ran on that day. Why does it say he ran on that day? So, what day was it? Right? So, Pashupshat, I think, is actually that he's just saying it was the very same day. The very same day he ran away, he arrived, he came to Achish, king of Gas, which is significant, which may be significant later. What day was it? We didn't really talk about this, but what day was it? What day of the week? Shabbos, right? How do we know it was Shabbos? So if you understand, like Chazal, that what he ate was the Lechem Apanim, so that it was Shabbos, because that's when they removed the breads from the Shulchan, from the Lechem Apanim, the special showbreads are removed on Shabbos, and that's what he said. He said that it was still hot. He took it right off the Shulchan and gave it to David. So it was Shabbos.
He takes the sweat.
Oh, it's Pikuach Nefesh. He's in danger. So he's on the run. But apparently he cut. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you for sure, but no, he said a king or someone who's needed by the tzibur.
But David wasn't king yet.
What?
David wasn't king yet.
But he was a great general. He was the son-in-law of the king. He was very, very chashev. Right? So it's interesting that it was Shabbos, because that we'll mention, we'll come back to that later. The Mefarshim, though, they learn here the Radak and the Mitzvah David, again on a Pshat level, that it's going back on Vayivrach Bayomahu. He ran away on that day, meaning now he really ran away. Before, okay, he ran away to Nov, but now he left Eretz Yisrael. He went to Eretz Plishtim. So now he really ran away. The way the Mitzvah David says it is, as long as he was in Eretz Yisrael, he was still in the Rishus, in the territory of Shaul. Now he's no longer in Shaul's territory. Now he really has run away. And the Radak says that a similar thing, but before he was findable, perhaps. As long as he was in Israel, Shaul might still find him. But now he was in Eretz Plishtim, so he wasn't really going to be found. So he comes to Achish, the king of Gas. Vayomru avdei Achish elav. And the servants of Achish said to him, to Achish, Halozeh David melech ha'aretz. This is David, king of the land. David, king of the land. Halo laze yanu v'mecholos lemur. It was for this man that they would answer, that they would sing with their instrument, their mechol instrument, saying, and this is a reference back to an earlier episode where it said that when David would travel around, so the girls would come out and they'd sing, Hika shol ba'alafav, shol struck in the thousands, the David berivivosav, and David struck in the tens of thousands. So that was the praise that they would give for David. So apparently the Plishtim, you know, the media publicized this thing that people would say this about David, and even in Eretz Plishtim, Eretz Gass, they knew that this is what they would say about David. Now, what do they mean that he's Melech Haaretz? What do they mean he's Melech Haaretz, the king of the land? That's a pretty serious statement.
Well, they're probably sure that what's going on.
Meaning? Okay, so there are those who learn that way. I don't really understand it because it doesn't seem to be public yet. We have no other. It doesn't imply anywhere that it's public. What? Okay, could be. So that's one possibility, that they knew that he was going to be king. On a very simple level, which just David says, he's like the king because he's the general, you know. He's the king of the land because he's this very powerful general, right? He has almost as much power as the king. Carries a big sword, right? Now Rashi learns, and this may play back to the story with the sword. Actually, I just thought of this now, but maybe this will answer your question and reference to yours. Maybe this is why he wanted the sword, even though he... Exactly, he comes to Eretz Plishtim, and he says, remember me? Remember this sword? This belonged to your Goliath, to your great warrior. So Rashi says, based on the Medrash, that what they were telling Achish is that he's the king of our land. Remember the deal? Remember the deal with Goliath? Im yuchal ilachim iti, Goliath said, if you can fight me, the Kani, and you can strike me down, v'ayinu lachem la'avadim, we will all be your servants. So now David comes back and he's holding Goliath's sword. And he says, I'm back, right? Here I am. So the way Rashi says it, they told Achish, Ein lecha ela sheterid mikisacha. All you have to do at this point is get down from your throne, via melech haaretz hazos, and he should be king of this land. So apparently, though, Achish was not really so excited about this, and now David's alone, and he's in trouble because Achish is not going to take this lying down. So pasuk yud gimel vayasim David has the dvarim ha'ela bilvavo, and David placed these words in his heart. He took them to heart by yira me'od, and he was very fearful b'pnei Achish melech Gass, because of Achish, the king of Gass. He became very scared that Achish was going to try to kill him. Vayishano estamo b'neihem. So what did David do? Vayishano estamo. He changed his tam, his reasoning. He feigned that he was mad. He feigned madness. He made it look like he had gone. He was an imbecile. Vayisholel biyadam, and he acted like a shote. He acted like an idiot. Vayitav al dalso sashar, and he began to like scratch symbols into the doors of the gate. Vayored riro al zakano, and he allowed saliva to drip down from his mouth onto his skin, he made himself look like he was crazy. Now, what was he hoping to accomplish with this? So either they would say, oh, it's not David, it just looks like him. Look, this is a madman. It's not David. Or they'd say, even if it is David, we have nothing to worry about. He's gone mad. He's incapable of harming us. Nothing to worry about. Let him go. Vayomer Achish al Avadav, and Achish said to his servants, Hinei Siru Ish Mishnageya, you see a crazy man. Lama Taviu Oso Eli, why have you brought him to me? This is not David. Or even if it is David, this is not someone who's a threat. What are you bringing him to me for? There's no point. Chasar Mishugayim Ani, am I lacking crazy people? I have enough people, I have enough shotim around me. The Medrash says that both his wife and his son were shotim, were mad. I guess it wasn't so pleasant to live with him. So, ki avesim ezeh, that you need to bring another one, I have enough madmen around me. Mishtageh alai, to act crazy by me. Hazeh yavo el besi. Are we going to allow such a person into my house? Get him out of here. I have no interest in this guy. Let him go. So David feigns madness, and it allows him to escape from the threat of Achish. Now, this episode was seemingly actually quite dangerous for David. And David writes a parak of Tehillim based on this episode. And we say it on Shabbos. And perhaps the reason why we say it on Shabbos is because it happened on Shabbos, like I said before. And the parak begins with David bishanoso estamo lifnei Avimelech. David, unto David, write a psalm unto David, when he altered his reasoning, when he made himself seem mad before Avimelech, in front of Avimelech, vayigarsheyo vayelach, and he sent him away. Now, who's Avimelech? Because here his name is Achish, not Avimelech. Now, don't confuse him with Achimelech. Achimelech was the Kohen. But it doesn't say Achimelech, it says Avimelech. Who's Avimelech? Good, excellent. So Rashi, other Rishonim say two things. They say either every king of the Plishtim was called Avimelech, like we found by Avraham and Yitzchak, that they each encounter a king of the Plishtim named Avimelech, or it's just possible that he just had two names and one of them was Avimelech. He has a father who's the king, yeah? Oh, Avimelech, my father the king. Yeah, I guess. Now,
it's not like, but maybe he's saying that it's not just
So David goes on in that parak of Tehillim, and he says, Avarcha es Hashem becholes, I bless Hashem at all times, even in a time of trouble. Tamid tilaso befi, his praise is always in my mouth. Bashem tisaleo nafshi, on Hashem my nefesh, my soul is uplifted or praised. Yishmu anavim v'yismachu. Anavim, humble ones should listen and should rejoice. And humble ones here, I think I saw in Rav Hirsch, someone points out, doesn't mean just, you know, humble like we think of humble of anav. But often, especially in those times, someone who was humble of both, you know, of spirit, but also humble of property, of possession, and was often poor. The Rav Hirsch says the word anav is related to the word ani. They're connected. That a person who was, he was humble of little means also, often. And David was broke at this time, right? David had nothing. He was on the run. He had a few loaves of bread to his name. But he says, He says, look at my what happened with me, and Yishmu Anavim, other poor people should hear Vismachu, and they should rejoice because of the, you know, there's always that opportunity for salvation. And he goes on, he says, Gadlu Hashem Iti, you know, other poor people join me and raise up Hashem, Gadlu Hashem Iti, Uniramim Hashmo Yachtav, let's raise up his name together. And then he says, Darashti Es Hashem Ve'anani, I sought out Hashem and he answered me. So the Radak says, what's he referring to? He's talking about when he was in their hands, right? We see that it doesn't say explicitly, but he was taking it under control of the Plishtim here. That's why he was brought to the house, and he had to feign madness, and he was let go. But he was in trouble. And he says, Darashti Es Hashem, when I was in trouble, when I was in their hands, I sought out Hashem, and I davened to be saved, Ve'anani, and I was answered. Umikom migurosa hitzioni, and he saved me from all my enemies. Who are all his enemies? He saved me from Shaul, who sent to my house to try to kill me, right? And he tried to throw a spear at me, and Hashem saved me, and he also saved me from the Plishtim. And then a little bit later, he has another pasuk. He says, Chonem malach Hashem saviv le'ireya v'yachaltzeim. The Malach of Hashem camps around those who fear him and saves them. So the Ibn Ezra also learns this into the story. He says, David was surrounded by enemies. He was surrounded by the Plishtim. They were going to take him. And Hashem sent a Malach to save him. He was saved. He sees that as Hashem sending a Malach as a salvation. I don't know if there was a specific malach, you know, that, but the idea that Hashem was the one who saved him, so that, he says, that's Hashem sent a malach in order to save me. And the last little reference we have to the story also in this parak is, he says, Kefirim Rashu V'ra'evu, the Kefirim often refers to young lions, but also like Kofar, those who deny, heretics. What?
Kofar.
Right. So, what?
Is it spelled the same way?
It's the same letters, yeah. So,
if it's spelled Chazar.
What?
If it's spelled Chazar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean the root's the same, though. The root's the same. So the kefirim, those who are heretics, they will be poor and be hungry. V'darshei Hashem lo yachzru chol tov, and those who seek out Hashem will not miss out on any good. Because David says, even though I was broke, I was poor, I was starving, and yet Hashem still saved me, and I had salvation. So we say this on Shabbos, kind of, you know, when you know the story behind it, you know the context, so it adds much, much greater meaning to it. So, and again, like I said, I think I saw it probably in Mitzvot David, Mitzvot Mishpato Zav again, that perhaps the reason why we say it on Shabbos is because this occurred on Shabbos. David said it on Shabbos. But either way, Ritz Hashem, this should help us with our Kavana when we say it next Shabbos in Sukkot Zimra, a newfound understanding for the story behind it. All right.
Thank you, Rabbi.